I've been taught that, you know, courage isn't the absence of fear. It's having fear and doing it anyway. You know, knowing that I wanted to go to space was definitely always on my trajectory. But I didn't want to be an astronaut. I assumed, you know, my precocious 7-year-old mind was like, well, obviously, when I grow up, everyone's just going to have a rocket in their own garage.
Today on the Courageous Podcast, we had Loretta Hidalgo, a superstar astronaut for Virgin Galactic.
Yeah, she's a rock star, isn't she? I should say she's a star. I mean, she's seen some things, and I loved her intensity. I love how intentional she was, especially now what's going on with planet Earth and COVID. To have an astronaut who's sort of seen Earth from a very different lens puts things in perspective pretty quick.
Yeah, she was great. Talked about how she faced fears, something you wouldn't think an astronaut has, but just like all of us, you know, manages the thought process going through her head every day. So really fun episode.
Enjoy. What's up, Mr. Thompson? How you doing, buddy?
Mr. Berman, I'm doing great.
Hi, Loretta. How are you?
Ryan, I'm doing great.
Loretta, it's been a long time since I've actually seen you. You know that, right?
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So just for context purposes, this is Loretta Hidalgo. Congratulations on your book. We're going to talk about that.
Thank you.
Loretta Hidalgo and I met, we actually met through Summit Series on Summit at Sea. That's where we really met first, on a boat. And you were talking to Tony Hsieh. And I, of course, was trying to, like every other human, elbow my way in to talk to Tony Hsieh, too. Really had no business talking to him, to be honest, at the time. And then I'm like, well, what do you do? And just the world, I guess, for me, selfishly, I was meant to meet you at that time. And I needed a little Loretta Hidalgo in my life. And I do, Loretta, I talk about you in almost every presentation. Because I talk about how the world is a funny place, that my first in-person interview was with you. And before the trays hit the table, you're like, so what makes you qualified to write a book about courage? Touche astronaut. And Loretta is that she is an astronaut. Are you still, I should probably have known this. Are you still with Virgin Galactic?
Yes.
Do you want to give a quick sort of synopsis on what you do over there?
Yeah, sure. So I am a founder astronaut at Virgin Galactic, which just means that my husband and I put down $200,000 back in 2005 and bought tickets to do suborbital space flights on Richard Branson's space tourism vehicle. It's called Spaceship Two Unity. It was named by Sir Stephen Hawking. And let's see, in 2010, we got an upgrade from customer to husband that got invited to be the CEO by Richard Branson. And so we moved out to California and started to get more involved in the day-to-day running of the company. So I, in 2015, I came on, I started working with the early career group at Virgin Galactic. I like working with the young folks just starting out in their careers. And then from there, became a consultant, and I lead the New Right Stuff training at Virgin Galactic. So I work with people who want to sort of go through the hero's journey and train and develop themselves to be, I say, to use space to bring out the best in them. So sort of a leadership training course that I do in the spring and the fall. They're used to being in classes, so it's like familiar for them. So they just keep doing what they were doing. It's a lot of fun.
Can you give a 10-second quick bit on the hero's journey, what that means for people who don't know what that means?
Absolutely. Sorry. That's I'm a big Star Wars fan. So,
An astronaut's a Star Wars fan.
I know. It's shocking. Revelation, revelatory here. Full disclosure. I'm out of the closet. I wanted to be Princess Leia when I grew up. The hero's journey. Joseph Campbell's book, The Hero of a Thousand Faces. George Lucas, when he was writing Star Wars, used that to sort of inform his script writing. And it's basically the narrative structure of like every great heroic epic from, you know, Homer's The Iliad to Harry Potter to Superman to Star Wars. And it starts with a hero getting a call to adventure and refusing the call, being like Luke being like, no, I gotta go work on the moisture evaporators. I got the harvest coming up. I can't go to Alderaan. No, I'm sorry. I was just saying I would do anything to get off this rock, but now I've changed my mind. I absolutely don't want to go. And then they meet the mentor. They go into this special world. They begin training. They have their big conflict with the dark side in this case. And they go through a whole process of growing and learning about themselves through these challenges. And they come out the other side like a better person. Then they have the journey home and then return with the elixir. So returning back to your home community and being able to pay it forward, give back, and contribute to your people.
That's awesome. I'm just curious, like, when did you know that you wanted to be an astronaut? When did that whole process start for you?
Well, I wanted to go to space as long as I can remember. So there are pictures of me at Kennedy Space Center on the lunar rover when I was about 5 that I don't even remember, but clearly it must have had a sort of subconscious influence on me. But by the time my first memories in kindergarten are of seeing the Apollo astronaut on the moon on the bulletin board, and the teacher saying, if you knew all your letters, you could get your picture up on that bulletin board in the, you know, EVA faceplate, like you're the astronaut on the moon. And I was just like, oh my God, I need to do that. I need to be there. That's so me. And being really frustrated because I knew I didn't know my letters. I was a little dyslexic. So I still struggle with B's and D's. And so I was like, oh man, I'm never going to get to be an astronaut because I don't know B from D. But luckily I was really clever and I knew I had a 50-50 chance on the flashcards. So she got to the last one. And I was like, yeah, that's B. And she just went to the next card and I was like, yes, I got it right. And I knew the next one was D. And she's like, oh, congratulations, Loretta. You know all that. So that was the beginning of my life as an imposter, feel it with the imposter syndrome. But that's another story. But yeah, so working through all that and finding out, you know, knowing that I wanted to go to space was definitely always on my trajectory. But I didn't want to be an astronaut. I assumed, my precocious 7-year-old mind was like, well, obviously when I grew up, everyone's just going to have a rocket in their own garage. I don't need to be an astronaut to go to space. That's like passe. But you know, like many other things I thought as a kid, you know, the flying cars and the world government, you know, didn't come to pass as quickly as we thought. So we're still working on all that.
I mean, did you ever feel like, I feel like you have to be perfect to be an astronaut. So even the B's and the D's conversation, are you saying I could still be an astronaut now?
Absolutely. That's the whole point of this new era of opening up spaceflight for everybody, is that, you know, you no longer have to be a fighter pilot or a PhD chemist or, a rocket scientist to go to space.
So you describe on your LinkedIn profile that you are a space explorer with a passion for Earth. Can you what does that mean?
That's a great question, Ryan. Absolutely. So what I love about space explorers is that we don't take anything for granted. You know, we see oxygen, like on, and we're like, whoa. This planet has free and abundant oxygen that I can just breathe. Dang, this is cool. So like, you know, other people be like, what? There's no car side hamburger service. You know, they'd find something to be frustrated by or complain about. But for a space explorer, you know, we're just marveling like, whoa, the gravity on this planet is perfect. The sky is the perfect color blue. Well, there's water. You mean the pressure in the atmosphere is the perfect pressure to have water be stable in liquid form? This is amazing. So space explorers have a true appreciation for Earth and its bounty and its uniqueness and its beauty. And so I think having the space explorer's perspective makes you appreciate how amazing our home planet is. And I'm happy to go to other planets and go explore the system, solar system and beyond. And I'll always have a reverence for my home.
I think obviously, you know, thinking about just going to space alone could be scary. Like, how do you manage, or how have you managed fears through your career, your life? I mean, that's pretty amazing, like, to have those aspirations and then actually make them come true as well.
Well, it's perfect for a courageous podcast, right?
Yeah.
it definitely takes courage. And you know, I've always, or I've been taught that, you know, courage isn't the absence of fear. It's having fear and doing it anyway. And that's definitely required for space flight. I've always known since I was a teenager that the path that I am choosing is risky. And I've always known, probably from watching too much sci-fi, that I'm going to lose people along the way, that I'm going to lose friends and family and colleagues, because space is hard and we've already lost people. You know, I was at the, you know, the Columbia accident in 2003. It was, you know, really hard. And then in 2014, we had an accident at Virgin Galactic where one of the pilots was killed. And it's days like that that remind you that what we're doing and how important it is. But for me, the piece, I am willing to risk my life to go to space. I'm willing to lose my life to go to space. If such a thing were to come to pass, I don't want you to be sad for me. I want you to know that I died doing what I love and doing what's most important to me.
Well, I love that alone. I mean, that answer, because that's kind of how I feel. I feel like life isn't living as long as you can. I don't think that's the intent here. I think it's, how do you live as full as you can? Like what's a full life? And I can't tell you what a full life is for you. I can only tell you what works for me. So just, you know, to hear that answer, it's like, do you feel fortunate you found something you're so passionate about and like you get to do it? Like, does that play into this?
Absolutely. And I'm not a risk taker. I mean, I get scared flying in little airplanes. You know, I'm not going to do some heli skiing. I don't want to die. I don't want to take any risk. I don't want to go out in a fiery car crash. I actually am really careful because I want to be able to go to space. I don't take risks in other arenas that aren't my passion, that aren't me worth my life. I'm like, no, I'll pass on that bungee jumping right now. I'm cool. Because I want to be able to live to see the Earth from space.
My favorite part's that, like, I don't want to die in a fiery crash, car crash. I don't know if that's on anyone's list, by the way.
Well, but I brought that up because for a NASCAR driver, that is their passion. Yeah. That is, they're like, look, don't cry for me if I go out doing what I love. And that's what they love. So, you know, if that's their choice and that's their journey and that's their life path, I'm not going to get in their way. The same way I wouldn't want them to get in mine. But that's why I made that distinction. Like, I'm not a NASCAR. NASCAR is not my passion. If it were, you know, that would be a risk I'd be willing to take.
So in this is, I wanted to read something to you that made it into my book. So this is not supposed to be a shameless plug for the book, but I just found it, you know, interesting. So, you know, how you face fear. And again, the whole point of facing fear is hopefully to help people face their own fears and address it so they can move through it. And you said, fear is just a piece of information. It's evolutionary, created to protect you. Just think, thank you, evolution, for trying to keep me safe. But I need to be here right now. It's living by choice rather than survival. Fear is your friend. It's not trying to hurt you.
That's great.
You said that. This is yours.
Yeah, no, I get it. No, it's funny because I was just rereading my birth story, the story of when I gave birth to my daughter. And I had a similar perspective, which is that, you know, it's a lot of pain. I mean, it's really intense. I did it, you know, without drugs. And so it's a really intense experience. And to be honest, I did it because I wanted to have that intense experience. I wanted to know. It's such a mystery, an unknown. Like, well, I get, you don't have that option of finding out what that experience is, but I do. So I was like, well, I wanted to know what, anyway, so I did that and it's really intense and it's very intense. And I remember thinking like all my senses in my body were like alerting me like, you know, danger, danger, something's happening. And I remember I kept hitting dismiss on the little pop-up windows. Like, no, it's okay. I'm not in danger. I know what's happening. I know it's supposed to be happening. I am not in danger. My daughters could be in danger if I don't get her shoulders passed out fast enough and she gets stuck. Her life could literally be endangered. But my life is not in danger right now. It's just discomfort, technically. And so I was able to sort of push through that pain and discomfort and be like, thank you, pain. Thank you, fear. I got this.
Well, I love how you kind of just unemotionally make it an object. It's like make it tangible for you, right? Because I think that's part of it is the separation. Right? Like, how do I get through this thing? Like, if you don't have awareness that you have fear or the feelings of fear, yes, just take over.
Yes.
So talk me through that. Like, how does that help you or help anybody?
Yeah, well, just slowing down and the first piece is, it's like, you see how much I think like a software program, right? So the first piece is just realizing that your thoughts aren't you. Because most of us have those collapsed, you know? So that's the first thing you have to do is separate yourself from your thoughts. And that's, it's like G.I. Joe, like knowing's half the battle. You're like, woo, you're halfway there if you can do that. So you are not your thoughts. You're the person who's listening to your thoughts. You're the observer. So if you can be like, oh, I feel like crap today. I'm like, oh, that's just a thought that came through my airspace. And you can either choose to accept it and embrace it, or you can choose to let it go by. It's not you. You're not the origin of that thought. You're just the observer of the thought. And so then if you bring that perspective to all of your thoughts, then you have the fear like, oh my God, they're going to reject me. Or, oh my God, you know, this is terrifying. What could happen? You know, we're going to lose everything. Then you have that distance to be able to be like, maybe, or maybe not.
That's interesting. Did so you wrote a book too, right? The New Right Stuff.
Yeah.
And you talk about clarifying your vision. How does that play into kind of this thought process and what you put into the book?
Well, the more you are clear about your vision and what you're here to do, the more you can be in the driver's seat instead of these random thoughts that come at you from wherever. And so if I wake up in the morning and the first thing I do is ask myself a question like, how can I have fun fulfilling my mission today? Then I'm in the driver's seat. Then I get to say which way we're going, not the first thought that comes in like, oh my God, you didn't send that email to that guy you said you're going to. Where you never do anything on time. What's wrong with you? Could derail my whole day. In fact, it does oftentimes. So the more clear you are in your intention and your direction and your vision for your life, the more you have control over how your state is, how your day goes, which is basically how your life goes.
Was this like something that was always innate to you, or was it like going through the training that you've been through? I mean, when did this become clear for you?
Well, the energy and enthusiasm is innate. I've always had that. The wisdom, it was learned. I'm very, very grateful for all the incredible teachers I've had. And the transformational work that I've done. So it started with the summer camp that I went to as a girl, where we got extraordinary training in authenticity and communication and acknowledgement and affirmation, and just loving being your whole self and loving other people. We weren't just learning abstractly about religious concepts. We were taught that you wanted to practice it, be living it, be the embodiment of it. So be the embodiment of love and generosity and looking out for one another. And so getting to be in a community of people who are literally walking the walk or hiking the hike is extraordinary. And that was just the beginning of the journey.
Well, actually, like, speaking of the beginning of the journey, can we go there?
Yeah, of course.
So where are you from?
I'm from Santa Rosa, California.
Relationship with family, good, bad?
Great, through lots of hard work. I have a great family, but I also had, you know, did the teenager thing and kicked my dad out of my life for about 15 years and thought I was too cool for school. And, you
know. Just 15 years?
Only 15 years, dads. That's all you have to endure is 15 years of the cold shoulder. And then she'll come around if a miracle occurs at 27, which is what it did for me.
Great. Ryan and I both have daughters. So this is just great news. 15 years.
Hopefully they won't be as uppity as I was.
What I remember about our in-person interview was, I mean, not only are you intentional, but you're intense.
Yeah. Yes.
I think it's great. No, it's good. But how is, like, where did that come from? Where did that driving force, personality, take my life into my own hands? Did you teach that to yourself? Was it from a family member book?
Yeah. So the intensity is innate. That's always been there. Learning how to control it and direct it, because it's like a bull in a china shop. I mean, I'm intense, which is great when I'm productive, but it can be terrible when I'm depressed or angry. Oh, oof. Yeah, anger is one of my beautiful dark sides. Yeah, intense anger is, you don't want to see that.
Well, in the spirit of Star Wars, like I do feel like a lot of this is Jedi-ing it. Like, do you feel that way? Is it like, do you have the Jedi? Okay.
Oh, totally. No, I'm a Jedi knight through and through. That's my worldview. That's, you know, I might even dare say my religion. It's yeah, and intensity, it's funny. When I was a kid, I was, you know, I once got the nickname, the girl that could laugh and cry at the same time. So yeah, I feel things really intensely. And in fact, I think of like the earth as a living system and all of us as like part of the living system. Like I'm a biologist. So I think of us as my dream is that all of humanity could come together to work together as a superorganism, like the way bacteria, the single cells can come together to make like a fruiting body of a mushroom. I might be going a little fast here, but, and I would definitely be like part of the sensory system of that organism. Cause I feel things intensely. So that would be my role. Some people are a thinker. Some people are the seer. Some people are the muscle. Some people are the oxygen or the heart, but yeah, my role that I'll be delegated will be feeling things intensely.
What are some of the tools that you use to actually manage that? You talked about that a little bit, but I mean, are there things that you do on a daily basis or conversations you have with yourself or meditation or anything like that?
Oh, it's absolutely like 100%. That's so critical for my survival. So yeah, waking up and asking an empowering question is my latest one. I've been doing some Alcoholics Anonymous 12-step work. So I've been journaling every morning for rage, not for alcohol, but I've been treating my temper as like, you know, what is it? What do they call it in Alcoholics Anonymous? Like to restore sanity, basically they're trying to restore sanity, from sobriety. So I've been calling it sort of emotional sobriety. So for my emotional sobriety, meditation and, getting outside every day. Especially now during the, we're in our COVID lockdown. And so going out into the desert behind my house, and there's lots of open space. And I've been trying to use more laughter and gratitude are the antidotes, my secret superpowers. So like, and I notice it's so funny in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's this trick where you're supposed to notice like the precursor to the breakdown. So the precursor to the first drink, which is, you know, bad. And for me, it's the precursor to screaming and yelling and losing, getting at rage. And for both of them, the precursor is resentment. Mm-hmm. It's like, why did you leave the fridge open? Or why didn't you put your shoes on when I told you to? And when you start to feel that resentment, or like, why didn't you pick me for the job? You know, I'm going to have a beer. You know, it's that's the warning track. And so the antidote for resentment is gratitude. So when I feel that like resentment, I just stop and I'm like, hey, this planet has free and abundant oxygen that I can breathe. That's amazing. Or, you know, I'm healthy and I can eat food and I can dance and I can laugh and I have internet and, you know.
They're almost like pendulum triggers.
What's a pendulum trigger?
I don't know. I just made it up. But like anytime you have like a resentment thought, can you create like a pendulum trigger to take you back to the positive?
Yes.
I'm going to use it as a hashtag, pendulum triggers. What do you think, Ryan?
Gratitude.
I love it. I think it's perfect. I mean, it's yin and yang, right? What has journaling done for you? I know a bunch of people that have got into that. And is it just getting your thoughts out onto paper? I mean, is it, do you look back on it, on what you journal?
Not nearly enough, to be honest. But my favorite part of journaling is stream of consciousness journaling. We do this as a practice at our New Year's retreat every year, which is fabulous. And you just give your, we just make up a prompt, like on the spot. I'll be like, how about if only she hadn't? And then we'll get 10 minutes on the timer and everyone will just totally stream of consciousness. And the only rule is you can't stop writing, even if you have to write the same sentence over and over or something. And you just like, if only she hadn't, you know, told me I looked fat when I was 7, you know, or if only she hadn't procrastinated too long on writing that term paper, you know, then, and it goes off. And what comes up is like all this stuff, this unprocessed, this resentment, this baggage, this old stuff, or it could be something creative. Like you know, write a beautiful, you know, creative piece of fiction of like, you know, she hadn't, you know, turned it the wrong way out of the driveway. You know, she would never would have met him, you know, and you could do a fiction thing. So, but it's neat because what's cool about it is it's subconscious. It's not anything you tried to write or you intended to write. It's just what wants to be written. And so sometimes it feels like the universe is sending messages to me, or it's like a medium for the universe to teach me what I most need to hear in that moment. And so it's very beautiful in that way.
So as someone who loves the earth and space, and you had already mentioned that we're welcome to COVID time. So here we are doing the best we all can. But about 3 weeks, I had this thought, I don't know why it came to me or where it came to me, but it's like, don't you think it's like a little ironic that Earth sent us all to our room for like a month? And it was like, you guys can't figure this out. So I'm going to clean this up for a little bit.
Totally. Yeah. And she's sparing the young too.
Interesting.
It's an interesting, very interesting.
I mean, it's beautiful outside. I mean, I'm doing, I've definitely practiced where we stay inside. And I've, as a guy that's been spending a lot of time on airplanes, it's been nice not to. Like I'm having dinner with my family every night. But I had to like go drive and pick up takeout, and I took my mask and all my good stuff. And I got on the highway and where there were no cars, and I live in Southern California. It was gorgeous. Like there's something happening. There's lots of stuff happening because there's other moments where I'm like, it's going to rain frogs any moment. But I do, I found it like sort of odd that the earth would like finally intervene and was like, I'm going to clean me up because maybe you guys didn't do it at the level that you should.
Yeah. And it, what I find the most beautiful about it is it was a very gentle warning shot. She could have done something much more drastic and disastrous, like Ebola. If Ebola was as contagious as COVID, we would be in a world of hurt. You know, and moreover, you know, in the space community, we've talked for years about being prepared for an asteroid strike. You know, we like, it's, you know, it's, the odds are low. You know, who knows when it could happen? It's hard to predict, but if it did, it would be catastrophic. And let us just think about it. Let us just think about how we prepare. How would we go about communicating with other countries and making a plan and handling this? Let's just even prepare and think about it. And it's the same, and it's these like, or these slow moving things like climate change. It's so hard to get your head around it because it's so slow. It's like a slow motion disaster, you know, that's going to take a decade or two to play out. And so it's hard for us to respond to it appropriately. And I think having this pandemic that forces us to rethink how we do things, it will make it easier. It's like training us. It's like training wheels. It's like, here, humanity, here's how you use Zoom. Here's how you organize a conference without people flying around the globe. You know, here's how you stay better in touch with your family. Here's how you cook and hang out with your kids. You know, it's like, it's giving us the opportunity to learn the skills that we're going to need to solve a lot of different crises that are going to could be coming our way. And for us to do the maturing and growing we need to as a species. And I really hope we take advantage of this opportunity to do that and to appreciate our essential workers and our medical personnel. I mean, it's a pretty intense thing we have right now.
Do you, you know, it's, do you feel like we're, I don't feel like we're doing a very good job right now playing nice with our neighbors as a country, you know, and I was watching, this says more about me. I was watching LeBron James, Barbershop, and John Stewart was on it. And this is years ago. This is like maybe 18 months ago, 2 years ago. And the question was like, was really like, well, you know, obviously LeBron's African-American, John Stewart's Jewish. And it got around to like, why can't we all just get along? Like, what's it actually going to take for us all to get along? And John Stewart's like, an alien invasion. It's the only way we're all going to finally come together as a team. And in some ways, this is like our alien invasion, right? But yet, at least in America, I feel like we're looking out for ourselves. If anything, like the states are looking out for themselves. Some states are coming together with other states, at least a little bit. What's your take on all this?
It's really hard for me. It really makes me kind of sad. One of the things that I used to say a lot is that people often talk about aliens or God and want like aliens or God to intervene on human affairs to save us, to like save us from our own immaturity or ignorance. And that, you know, like you said, like the alien invasion is the only thing that's going to wake us up. And they're like, or the aliens are going to come and bring some magical technology that will help us learn how to do something better. And I would always get really frustrated because I would say, look, if I was an alien, or if I was God, the whole point would be for you to learn how to figure this out on your own. I don't want to come bail you out. I want you to figure out how to grow up. It's like, just like with your kids, you want them to figure it out on their own. You don't want to tell them the answer to the math problem, because it's in the struggle. It's in learning how to do it on your own that you grow. And so, yes, this is working for helping us wake up a bit, I think. And I was a little disappointed that it had to come to this, that we weren't able to do it ourselves.
Helicopter parents, are you listening? Did you make it this far?
Totally. Yeah. No, they got to, and it's like the famous metaphor, like the caterpillar that's struggling to get out of the cocoon. And it's just struggling and it's working so hard and it's taking so long and it's just so much work and effort and looks miserable. And the little girl goes and gets the little scissors and because she wants to save the caterpillar from this struggle and from this pain and suffering. And so she cuts open the cocoon so that he can stop struggling. And the caterpillar falls to the ground with one, wing sort of half shriveled up and it dies. Because the caterpillar actually needs the struggle to get the muscle strength and to dry its wings off enough so that it can transform completely into a butterfly and come out ready to fly. And so we sort of have to go through these tough times to grow and learn and develop to become who we need to be.
I was on a Virgin Galactic site and looking at the purpose, and they just talk about these arbitrary lines don't exist from space, right? When you're looking at Earth. And so it says it's clear there's much more that unites us than divides us. And so it's so interesting that we're in this time and going through this right now. But, you know, when you have that opportunity to get a different perspective, like your community does, that has to like change your entire mindset, right?
Totally. In fact, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. One of the most profound things about the space industry or the community or the field is that we think on a different time scale and a geographic scale. We think in 10 years, 100 years, in the sci-fi world, we think in like 1,000 years. And that's just the time scale that's just normal to us, natural to us. We don't think in quarterly, we don't think in election cycles, we don't think in news cycles. You know, it's a much longer time scale. It's more like Chief Seattle saying, you know, you have to live for the seventh generation. So we naturally, as a community, have that broad perspective on time and in space. So like some people think of their neighborhood or their college basketball team or their state or their nation and or their religion or their language. But space people, we think as a planet or we think as a solar system or we think as a galaxy. And it's just a totally different time scale of time and space. And I think COVID can help us people think on those time scales as well. And so I think it's really valuable that I think that's one of the things that we can bring to the conversation is that perspective to help us think on these bigger time scales, think on these bigger geographic scales.
Plus, isn't the community, it's not like I live in the city of San Diego with all my San Diegans who all kind of look alike and speak the same language. I mean, aren't you, there's no borders in this community, correct?
Yeah. So in the astronaut community, we've got, you know, like 600 people signed up to fly into space with us from 58 different countries. They speak all different languages. They come from all different walks of life. And I'm really excited for when they can come back from their looking back on the Earth from space and be able to share that firsthand in their home communities.
So the book, let's get into the book. And so again, it's called The New Right Stuff, right? Using space to bring out the best in you. Mm-hmm. And in full disclosure, I feel like, I mean, when we met in 2015, you know, and you're like, oh, this kid's writing a book. You're like, I'm going to write a book. And then I wrote my book. And then when we finally reconnected like 1,000 days later, which is what it was about, you're like, wait a minute, you wrote that book. And you're like, oh shoot, I need to get my book done. I kind of felt like some angst, good angst. So when did you, like, was that what happened sort of, or what happened? And then when did you finish it? Talk me through the process.
Yeah. So I used the angst of turning 40 to put a fire under my butt to write the book. And so every morning I'd get up at 5 a.m. and I'd just write stream of consciousness from 5 to 6 for a year before the kids got up and make all the noise. And then, so that's how I wrote it. And then for the next 4 years after that, I spent editing it, revising it, trying to put it in order because there was no order to it. It was just whatever came to me to write in that moment. And then I had to figure out how to make a flow to it. And so that took a while. And then I had it on draft format. And then I finally got a nice, font and template and everything else and got it up on Amazon, I think about a year and a half ago.
So what is, you know, if you're talking about the new right stuff, clearly then that means that what we thought was the right stuff wasn't the right stuff. And now here we are with some new right stuff.
Oh, not at all. There's definitely the original right stuff is still the right stuff. We're just standing on the shoulders of giants. So I say we have the privilege, we have the fortune to be able to build, take up where they left off and build from what they left us, which is the Apollo program and the legacy and that, you know, steely-eyed missile men, you know, being able to fly a jet under pressure, you know, being able to handle, you know, cold and pain and fear and all of those things and be smart and be everything that they had to do in the 60s. And when I talk about the new right stuff, I'm talking about adding to that. I'm talking about adding in authenticity, adding in vulnerability, which was a piece that wasn't really part of our culture, especially the macho culture of the 60s. Adding in storytelling, adding in connecting at a heart level, adding in feminine, adding in integrity. And I like to say, and I always say in smokeless conference rooms, because the other thing that they had in the 60s was, you know, everyone's smoking like a chimney and missing control. And there's these just clouds of smoke. So there's, you know, a lot of, you know, divorce and alcoholism that came in that era that I think we can learn from and transcend.
And what are you hoping comes like? So if I, like, is the book for me? Can I pick it up? And is it a leadership book?
Absolutely. So it's targeted at people who love space. And that's where a lot of the stories and the metaphors are geared at. And it would work for anyone who wants to go on their own hero's journey and articulate what their mission is and have the courage to go for it and take the risks and never give up. And it's got all kinds of, it's great for people who have short attention span. So yes, it'd be perfect for you and me, Ryan. About every page is a new section. So, you know, it's sort of like something you could just keep, you know, at the bedside and just, you know, read one page every night and get a new, you know, little gem of wisdom, a little pop story that can be like a little insight that can help you learn how to be your best.
Well, I love that. I mean, yeah, anytime you can short circuit me out of my normal,
yeah,
which I think a lot of us need is that little get us out of this sort of, I don't even know what normal means. I mean, I was almost, it's not even new normal, which I don't like that term either, by the way, but like, give me what I need to be better. Like if you're going to give me the tools to just think a little bit differently or unlock me. So thank you for finally finishing the book and for bringing it to us. Cause obviously as a guy that studies courage, I'm all for anyone that wants to go through that fear, go through that scary part to the other side, liberate forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Yuri's night. What's Yuri's night? I mean, it just happened, correct?
Yeah, we just had it last Saturday. It was a ton of fun.
Are you the CEO of Yuri's Night?
I'm the co-founder of Yuri's Night, yeah.
Ryan, are you familiar with what Yuri's Night is?
No, can you tell me?
Sure. So Yuri's Night is a world space holiday that we launched back in 2001. So this was our 20th year of doing it. So it's super fun. Takes place on or around April 12th, which is the day that the first human went into space, Yuri Gagarin, who's a Soviet cosmonaut. And 20 years later to the day, the first U.S. space shuttle took off, April 12th, 1981. By accident, it was scheduled to launch on April 10th, and they had a software glitch, and they had to go back and, you know, take the bug out of the code, and they launched on April 12th, not in homage to Yuri, but just by coincidence. And so I consider it a cosmic coincidence and one worth celebrating. So we use April 12th as a day to celebrate the power of space to bring the world together. Because in the 90s, we joined forces with Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union and started working on the International Space Station together with our European partners in Canada and Japan. And we like sort of put the space race behind us and started to fly cosmonauts on the space shuttle, started to fly NASA astronauts on the Soyuz, and work together with our systems are actually incredibly synchronistically compatible.
Do the party this year. I assume like if it's global, you were using some sort of digital means before, but how does everybody come together at a time like this?
Usually I host a big party in LA under the space shuttle and in Florida under the space shuttle. A week apart, and we, you know, 1,000 people under the shuttle, and we have astronauts and DJs, and it's a lot of fun, costumes. And this year, we took it all online. We, we did Zoom calls with different host guests. We had Chris Hadfield, the Canadian astronaut who did the David Bowie video from space. We had Scott Kelly, who just came back from a year in space, and he's apparently a big Grateful Dead fan. So he like called his buddy Bob Weir from the Grateful Dead. And they just did like a fireside chat where they got to geek out about space and the Grateful Dead for 30 minutes. It was just hilarious.
Can we come do this live from one of those sites next year?
Sure, of course. So we had a 5-hour broadcast last Saturday. I hosted about 2 hours of it. I interviewed 4 astronauts and Bill Nye and the CEO of the Girl Scouts. I gave an award for the Spirit of Yuri's Night to Duran Duran for their Apollo 11 50th anniversary concert they did at NASA's Rocket Garden in Florida last year, which was amazing. I'm a big Duran Duran fan, so that was fun to give that award to Nick Rhodes. I had a blast. My segments were all filmed in my bedroom, and I did the 4 costume changes and 4 set changes just for fun. So we had the opening sequences are great. If you watch any of it, watch the first half hour. It's totally worth it.
You have so much going on. I mean, you've accomplished a tremendous amount. What are you working on now? What's going on with Virgin Galactic? What's next for you?
Yeah, so Virgin Galactic is getting ready to get back into test flight. And our goal is to fly Richard Branson to space this year. And I hope to do my flight to space. I'm one of the first 100 that'll fly. So hopefully next year. The book, I'm working on the audiobook right now. Being edited, and I'm hoping to get that launched on Audible because I listen to all my books with Audible. So I figured if I want people listen to read my book, I better put it on Audible.
So are you reading it?
Yes, I'm reading it. So that was super fun. I really enjoyed that. And I'm taking on May the 4th because I'm a Star Wars kid.
May the 4th.
So May the 4th is coming up in 2 weeks, and I am launching my New Right Stuff training for the public. I've been doing it internally for Virgin Galactic and Virgin Orbit. And now that I've had to take all that onto Zoom for COVID, I was like, well, now that I know how to do this on Zoom, I could open it up to more people. So I'm going to be launching the new Write Stuff training for anyone who wants to.
Will the Audible be done by May the 4th?
You have to talk to my editor. I doubt it. He's got a lot on his plate. It takes a lot of, you probably know from all your audio editing, it takes a lot to do a chapter, but
and a lot of throat coat.
Yeah, my goal is
a lot of throat coat tea for me.
It's a lot of work. So my goal is to get that this summer. We'll let you know. Or you can just go to thenewwritestuff.com and we'll have a link.
Well, I appreciate you giving us an hour of your time. And maybe we close it out this way. And I think this is the right way because I know you have a mission that's not small. So if you were just going to share to someone listening to this, and bravo, if you've made it this far and are still listening, you deserve to hear this message. So you should hear this message. What would you leave our audience with in terms of taking today forward?
That's great. That there's a screensaver in your mind. And like the default screensaver, my default screensaver can be pretty judgmental and critical of myself and others. And then so I have to be really careful not to just let me go on autopilot. So I try to read like garbage in, garbage out. So you want to make sure you're reading, only click on things that are going to enrich your spirit. Be careful. There's a lot of clickbait on there. You know, you vote with your eyeballs. So protect your mind and your space are sacred. So only, make sure you're the same way you have to eat good foods. You want to make sure you're watching extraordinary content and reading extraordinary content that enriches you and builds you up and makes you stronger. So that, good quotes like Peter Diamandis, I was just reading his quote this week. He said, abundance is not providing a life of luxury for everyone. Abundance is providing a life of possibility for everyone.
Yes.
So, reading Henry David Thoreau, reading, Lao Tzu, reading great, not Lao Tzu, sorry, that's not what I meant. Some very inspiring, the Dalai Lama or something, following him on Twitter, making sure that you're surrounding yourself and I call it marinating. Make sure you're marinating in only the most uplifting and empowering and inspiring messages and content and visuals. So, because if you read too much of the news, it can really just tank my mood. And I have to go recover by listening to an hour of Tony Robbins or an hour of Martha Beck or, listening to some, doing the Oprah Deepak meditation or something, or, reading some Henry David Thoreau. So, making sure that you are protecting your spirit.
I think we'll close it out with this. It's a bit ironic that, and this was not going to be my close, by the way, for the record. Okay. So I want this on the record saying that, but you sort of reminded me of this. So it's a bit ironic that, a long time ago, I don't know why or where it came from, but I just wrote don't just look at the world differently, do the world differently. Mm. And I feel like if we could all start doing, maybe a little less stuck in our heads, a little bit more doing with intention, maybe we can make the world that we really all want to live in. Really appreciate your time, Loretta. Let's make sure we don't let 5 years. Well, we're coming to Yuri's night. We're coming. We're going to go.
Yeah. Come.
So you tell us which location. And thanks so much for your time. Keep rolling.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ryan. Good to see you again.
Join us next week as we discuss courage with CEO of Logitech, Bracken Darrell. Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed the episode, please don't forget to subscribe, rate us, and leave us a review.